Greetings, everybody. Welcome back to the Morning Lineup Podcast. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and we've got a lot on tap today, even though there's very little happening in the hot stove season still across the Major League landscape. We're going to have a lot of fun discussion today with my friends and colleagues, Richard Justice and Mark Feinsand. Gentlemen, thanks for coming aboard.
The hot stove is hot.
It's going to be hot here. We're going to make it hot as we can. But
I just say, you know, Richard, you're in Houston and it's not 5 degrees there. Castro and I are in New York and Cleveland. So let's not use the word hot very often because it's just not accurate for us.
No, I mean, we've been suffering here. It finally got back to 70 today.
If I could hang up on you, I would right now.
I mean, when it gets up to 20, and that is, you feel like you're kind of warming your hands at 20 degrees. That's about where we're at in the Northeast and Midwest right now. But, all right. So obviously not a tremendous amount has happened in this hot stove season. There have been some moves and we're going to kind of go over top lineups, as we sit here today, knowing full well, that a lot is going to change. I mean, the sheer mass of guys who are still available in free agent, it's absolutely staggering, and the trade market as well. So we do this knowing full well, soon to be outdated discussion, but, still always fun to kind of take it. Cause this is something that the teams have to do right now, guys, is kind of assess where they're at relative to other clubs. And, so in talking about top lineups, let's first throw out, I think we should just throw out a team that you think has done pretty good work this winter to improve their lineup. Mark, I'll start with you.
Well, it's easy to point to the Yankees and their acquisition of Giancarlo Stanton, but I think the Angels have done the most to better themselves this winter. You look at, you know, bringing Justin Upton back on the long-term deal, adding Zach Cozart, and of course, then there's the mystery of what is Shohei Ohtani going to give to this lineup. And Ian Kinsler also. So they've added three regular players to the lineup and another sort of X factor in Ohtani. And oh, by the way, they also are the best player in baseball already in that lineup in Mike Trout. So, and you know, one of the best hitters of the last 20 years in a lineup with Pujols, who is still not done just yet. So I really like what the Angels have done. And I think they've put themselves in position to challenge the Astros this year.
I'll be fascinated to see what they get out of Ian Kinsler at this, you know, he took a downturn offensively last year. Is Cozart going to be able to repeat what he did in 2017? These are significant questions, but certainly significant upgrades from what they had. And as you said, Ohtani is a huge X factor for them. And just the sheer usage of him, what's that going to be? I don't think anybody has a great feel for that right now. But one thing that stands about the Angels lineup is just lack of left-handed presence in general. So we'll see if that is something that affects them. Very, very right-handed heavy in that lineup. But Richard, a team that has improved this offseason is?
My handy-dandy rule of thumb is the team that gets the best player has improved the most, and that would be the New York Yankees. The addition of Giancarlo Stanton to a lineup that was first in the majors in home runs last year. How many did Stanton hit? Something like 59. And then the team that was second in the majors in runs, and you add Giancarlo Stanton. And not just that, you're going to get, hopefully, let's hope, a full season of Greg Bird. You're going to get Gary Sanchez continuing to progress. You're going to hopefully get a full season of Aaron Hicks healthy. And you know what I'm most intrigued about in the trade situation, the trade market could change this. I really love the idea of putting Miguel Andujar and Gleyber Torres in the lineup somewhere. So you have a great mix of veterans and kids, really talented kids. That potentially is a super, super lineup.
How good is it to be Gary Sanchez or Greg Bird? I mean, those guys had a lot of focus on them a year ago at this time, you know, kind of going into spring training, and Sanchez in particular, you know, coming off the, you know, the major rookie year he had and finishing second rookie year voting, despite only playing a couple months at the big league level. Those guys just kind of blend into that lineup now and huge sources of upside there.
Yeah. And, you know, a year ago, we're preparing to go to spring training and Greg Bird was a guy we all wanted to see. We didn't know what Aaron Judge was. He did 179. He was a swing and miss guy. And I don't think we didn't even come close to knowing how good Aaron Hicks is. Yeah, I remember when they got him, Brian Cashman said, you know, I know the whole thing hasn't come together in Minnesota, but he's a guy that if you, the things you can measure, the bat speed, the speed, the defensive impact and all of that, we think he's got a chance to be a really special player. So you really, I mean, beyond the money, that the way they projected Gregorius and Hicks and just the farm system with Bird and Sanchez and Judge and now Stanton, It's an exciting time to be a Yankees fan.
Absolutely. I'm going to go with the Cardinals for an improved team. This is not most improved team, because I think if that's the case, then probably Richard wins this little discussion here. But yeah, I mean, the Cardinals have obviously improved their lineup with Marcelo Ozuna coming off a monster season that gets, you know, not totally lost in the shadow of Giancarlo Stanton, but pretty close. This guy had a 312, 376, 548 slash, 145 OPS plus, 37 bombs, 30 doubles. So just a huge, kind of the season we envisioned from him for a while. This guy's had a lot of ups and downs, and literal down being sent to AAA a couple years back by the Marlins. But, you know, the Cardinals get him coming off of career year, and we'll see if he can repeat that at Busch Stadium. I think this is somewhat of an incomplete. I think there's still probably another move coming on the part of the Cardinals. We know they've, of course, tried and, you know, so far unable to get Toronto to deal Josh Donaldson. You know, we know it's a potential fit for Eric Hosmer, who's still one of the big bats available on the open market. So still more work to be done, but just had a screaming need for a middle of the order presence, and Ozuna can provide that. And, you know, now you're going to get a full season out of Tommy Pham. I love me some Tommy Pham, a full season of Paul DeJong, who was fantastic for them at shortstop last year. So things might be on the upswing there in St. Louis.
Yeah, and they've settled a lot of things. You know, a year ago, we were still going to go, okay, Grichuk and Piscotty, those are the cornerstones going forward, and they had some chances. Grichuk is still there, obviously, but now you look at shortstop with DeJong, as you mentioned, he settled in. Pham has earned the right to go to camp as a starting center fielder. I think Colton Long's going to be the player they always thought he would be. You know, and I don't know how it's going to work out at first base, whether Matt Carpenter actually moves all over the diamond, you know, as opposed to, you know, and how many at bats Jose Martinez gets and Jurco. Now, obviously, they've got their eye on Josh Donaldson, would like to add that one more piece to a team that's got a chance, a team that I think, you know, has made up some ground on the Cardinals. Whether it's enough, I don't know, but they're trending in the right direction.
You know, Castro, I would have to actually take exception with one thing you said. You said it's no question the Yankees are the most improved lineup. They can only go up one spot. They were already the second best lineup in the league last year. I think when you look at the team like the Angels, which was 22nd in the league in runs scored, or the Cardinals, even 13th in the league in runs scored, those teams have a lot more room to grow up, you know, to raise their level of run production. I think what they've done, the Yankees may be the best lineup, and that'll be a conversation we have momentarily. But I think in terms of who's improved from last year to this year the most, the other teams have taken, you know, equal, if not better, steps to you know, get even better than they were last year.
Yeah, one thing I like to say about the Angels is, you know, you could say, okay, Ian Kinsler's 35 years old. He's not coming off his best season. You could say Zach Cozart is 32. He is coming off his best season. Is Zach Cozart the guy of 2017, or is the guy that he's been most of his career? But you know what? I still go back to what Jim Leland used to tell his scouts, like, boys, if you're going to look for a perfect player, you're not going to find one. And I think the way Billy Epler approached it was, you know what? Zach Cozart makes us better. Ian Kinsler makes us better. We re-signed Justin Upton, and Lord knows there are people that could pick at Justin Upton's game for a million years. The bottom line is you put those guys in a lineup with Mike Trout and Simmons, you suddenly have a team that has a team that has a good lineup and potentially a really, really good lineup, and maybe has cut a little of those 21 games they finished behind the Astros.
No, you're absolutely right. Listen, the last few years, people have been begging for them to get Mike Trout more support and give Billy Epler credit. He went out and did it, starting with the Justin Upton acquisition late last summer. So they're trending in the right direction. Mark, we're going to start with you now. We're going to each submit three candidates. We get three candidates apiece for the discussion of top lineups in baseball. And then we'll just kind of take this hodgepodge of teams we come up with and come to some sort of consensus on, you know, perhaps the top five lineups in baseball. But Mark, you get to submit the first three candidates for this prestigious honor of Morning Lineup Podcast Best Lineups.
Okay, well, since I get to go first, I'm going to take the Yankees, so neither of you could do that, since they're the best lineup in baseball, and I don't even think it's close right now. For all the reasons that Richard mentioned earlier, when you look at adding Stanton to a group that already had Aaron Judge, Didi Gregorius, Gary Sanchez, Greg Bird, you know, Brett Gardner is still a very competent leadoff guy at the top. You know, I know, Richard, you talked about the two rookies in Gleyber Torres and Miguel Andujar. I'm going to cite the Brian Cashman, Bubba Crosby rule and say that they will not both be in the lineup on opening day. The Yankees will make another move to bring in another infielder. My guess is it's a third baseman. You know, Todd Frazier just hasn't been signed yet. His name won't go away in connection with the Yankees. I think he's going to take a if he comes back, it's going to have to be him taking a short-term deal, because I don't think they're going to lock up that spot. They just know that there's too much talent on that free agent market next year, especially Manny Machado. But I just don't see both rookies being in the starting lineup on opening day. That said, even if they are, it doesn't matter. This team is so good. You have Aaron Hicks hitting seventh on this team, coming off of a very good year. And I just think the Yankees are far and away the best lineup out there.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, Mark, do you think they need another starting pitcher? I mean, really need, not want, not, you know, add to their riches and all that. But is there a pressing need to have a guy to pitch in that group that, you know, they have seven or eight now?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think right now, if you look at the starting five that they have with, you know, with Tanaka and Severino and Gray, Sabathia and Montgomery, they're fine. And then you, like you said, you have some other guys as well beneath them. And I think with, you know, with Chance Adams on his way up, had a really good year at AAA last year, with blanking here, Justin Sheffield also making very fast tracks towards the big leagues. That's two guys who I don't know if they're going to make a huge impact this year, but they could if the injuries present the opportunity. So I don't think they need it. Now, that said, I'm not saying they're not going to get one. I think if they could trade for a controllable one, they would be open to it because, you know, you have to look at this thinking this might be Sabathia's last year. And, you know, they're always looking for controllable pitching like everybody else in the majors. I don't think they need a pitcher, but that doesn't mean they're not going to go out and get one.
All right, Mark, who are your other two candidates for top lineups here?
I'm going to throw the Angels in there, mostly because when you have the best player in the game and you've surrounded him with some more talent, as I discussed before, I think you have to at least throw them in the conversation. When you look at, you know, Simmons and Trout and Upton, Pujols, Cozart, Kinsler, what we get from Ohtani, we don't know yet. But I certainly think they're very much improved from last year. And I'm really excited to see what Mike Trout looks like in a lineup where he's actually got some other guys and some protection and to see what the Angels can look like this season. I still got one more. All right. I'm going to go with the team that was in the World Series last year from the National League in the Dodgers. You know, they were a very impressive offensive team last year. I think they were 12th in the league overall in runs scored. But that said, I think they were top 10 in OPS. You know, you look at you know, Cody Bellinger, you know, growing on his rookie year, you know, Corey Seager, Justin Turner coming off a career year, you know, Puig, Taylor, they've got some talent there. I think in the National League, they're not the best lineup in the National League, most likely. And I don't know that we're going to be able to, you know, put them in the top three in the majors. But I think when you talk about the top five in the majors, they're right there. They're deep. They're talented. And the year of experience of getting to the World Series, I think it's only going to help them as they go forward here.
All right. Good stuff, Mark. Richard, you're up. Give me your top three. Not your top three lineups, but give me three candidates for our discussion here of top lineups.
Yeah. My three for discussion are Astros, Nationals, Twins. Astros haven't done anything to get better. They're open to it. They've talked about Christian Yelich. You know, they have an open mind about adding an impact guy, whether it be Jake Arrieta, Yu Darvish, but Yelich would make some sense. Here's where I think the improvement's going to come. They're going to get a full season of Alex Bregman. I would think he's going to get better. Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa are still really good. Yuli Gurriel's really good. But, you know, you'd say, well, okay, it's two right-handed. And that's true. Their first five hitters are right-handed. But of that group, Springer, Bregman, Altuve, Gurriel, and Correa, you're really not going to take any of those guys out. But what's interesting is their top three prospects in terms of offense are all left-handed hitters. Derek Fisher's going to play some this year. They have a kid named Colin Moran, a third baseman. He's been mentioned in a lot of trade deals. And then their number one prospect is Kyle Tucker. Obviously, he will not start the season in the majors, and he's played only a handful of games at AA. But I think they feel like he is such a can't-miss guy that at some point in the second half of the season, he's got a chance to contribute. You know, and that's who it is. You know, if you're picking at it, you go, okay, you need another catcher. What are you going to get out of Evan Gattis? A ton of things like that. But it's a really deep lineup. Mike, our co-worker, Mike Petriello did a Statcast thing last year that it was one of the deepest lineups in history, more above average hitters than any team in baseball. So even with Carlos Beltran now having retired, this is still a really good team. And my the Nats, everybody knows the Nats are really good. And as Michael Taylor gets better and Victor Robles gets to the majors and as Trey Turner gets hopefully a full healthy season, they're terrific. And the team that probably others would not mention would be the Twins. And I would say, I just find those young guys, and you see a lot more of them than I do, Castro, those young guys, I want to see a full season of Polanco and Buxton. Hopefully Sano stays healthy. Rosario, Kepler. I mean, it's fascinating. And I know young guys take two steps forward and a step back, and maybe they're going to take a step back. But down the stretch last year, after Buxton got going, they were about as good an offensive team as there was in baseball.
Yeah, Twins are a sleeper in this discussion, just because of all the things you mentioned, all the upside that is present in that young group. And it's one reason why, and granted, no transactions have happened yet, because that's been the nature of the starting pitching market. But they've been aggressive in the starting pitching market this offseason to try to get that next piece to help round out that squad, because a lot of talent in that group. They were seventh in the majors in runs per game last season. If I'm not mistaken, they were first in the majors in runs per game in the second half. That's what catapulted them into the wild card game, and that was without Sano. So a lot of good things happening there in Minnesota. I'm going to keep it in the AL Central for my first of three picks. I'm going to throw the Tribe into the discussion. The Indians were sixth in the majors in runs per game last season. The question marks, though, quickly crop up because they lose Carlos Santana's switch hitting presence. He goes to the Phillies, who, by the way, were deserving of mention in the the improved teams discussion, just as the nature of doing something. But for the Indians to replace that with Yonder Alonso, remains to be seen what they get there. He's coming off a career year, but it was a year tailored more towards the first half than the second. Do they get a healthy Michael Brantley? These are the big questions there. Where was Jason Kipnis play, and what does he contribute after a lost offensive season? But, Frankie Lindor and Jose Ramirez are as dynamic an infield combo as you can find in this game. And what they do, not just offensively, but defensively as well, is pretty fun to watch on a nightly basis. They'll get a full season out of Bradley Zimmer, presumably. And he showed some capabilities for them as far as bringing that speed element to the equation. So the Tribe's got a pretty well-rounded lineup, albeit with the loss of that switching presence in Carlos Santana, which could loom large. We shall see.
Hey, Castro, Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa are on the phone. They want to talk to you.
I said as dynamic. I didn't say more dynamic. But, I mean, honestly, it's a fun discussion. But first of all, we don't know if Jose Ramirez plays second base. Then we have some spring training, debate stories to write. But if they move him back to third base, it hurts that discussion. But I think it's a legitimate discussion. I really do.
Yeah, and hopefully we're having the Lindor versus Correa versus Seager.
Right.
I hope we have that debate for the next 10 years, and it's a great one, and it's a spirited one, because these are three unbelievably looking players, three unbelievable gifted players.
And the Yankees are sitting there just waiting for the Gleyber Torres, Didi Gregorius combo to get its say in this conversation as well.
That's coming too. All right, my second pick, I'm going to throw the Cubs into the mix. We know the Cubs, especially by National League standards, are, the sheer depth of that lineup is really eye-catching, obviously. And as far as the 2018 concoction goes, we'll see what Kyle Schwarber delivers here coming off of a really rough year. I don't think he's going to hit 211. Again, guys, he might hit 215, but he's not going to hit 211 again. There's obvious upside there in Schwarber's bat. And, the way they can mix and match so well. Their bench is so deep. Ian Happ is, we're talking about Carlos Santana's switching presence. Ian Happ delivers that for them. He can play him all over the field. So,
I always thought Javi Baez is the key for them. He is such a dynamic player that when he's really good, they are pretty much unstoppable. But, and he's like Schwarber, like Contreras. He's part of their young nucleus that's growing up together.
Yeah. And, of course, I didn't even mention it doesn't even need mentioning Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant on the corner infield spots. So, that's a cornerstone to work around anytime. And Wilson Contreras, what he was carrying them offensively for a good chunk of last season before he got hurt. So, They are deep once again. They could use that depth, as I alluded to perhaps swing a trade here before spring training or before opening day. We'll see what happens on that front. But my third team for this conversation might be a controversial pick, but I'm going to throw the Red Sox in the mix for this very reason. Two reasons. One, something else is going to happen here. David Dombrowski is going to do something to add a bat to that lineup. We all think it'll probably be J.D. Martinez, but who knows? That's been the assumption for a while now, but obviously has yet to transpire. But some kind of move is coming there. But two, also, I mean, the Red Sox finished 10th in the majors in runs per game last season, and they hit, I have to look this up, but I don't think they hit any home runs last season. I think they're the only team in baseball with zero home runs, and they still managed to finish 10th. So I don't think it's going to be the same story for, I mean, Xander Bogaerts played last season with one hand for the better part of the year. He played hurt through that hand injury that certainly affected his production. Mookie Betts went backwards from his MVP candidacy in 2016. I see good things ahead for the Mookster. So, and
how many did Poppy hit last year?
What's that?
How many did Poppy hit last year?
You know, he hit zero, and that hurt them. I really felt that
he set a tone for them. He didn't hit any, and they didn't hit any. they're going to get a full season. They're going to get a full season from Devers, too. He's a terrific young player. So you're right. I mean, I know they're looking for another bat, but where does that guy get his at-bats? I mean, are we talking about a Hanley Ramirez, Mitch Moreland platoon at first, and then J.D. Martinez DHs? Because if I've got Betts, Bradley, and Benintendi, I'm not moving those. I'm not moving Devers off third, Bogaerts, Pedroia. So, I understand that you probably do need one more guy, but this lineup has a chance to be good. And I remember John Mozeliak, when they were getting ripped for not hitting enough home runs in St. Louis, he said, hey, offense is offense, no matter how you get it. But it's true, we are in a home run era that home runs win games, and they do need more.
No, I think that's exactly where it is, though, Richard. I think, Hanley and Moreland would platoon at first. Remember, Hanley has an option that kicks in if he hits a certain number of plate appearances for $22 million. He will not have that many plate appearances. So, I think they want to make sure that they have it locked in where I think it's 490 plate appearances he has to get to have that option kick in. That's not going to happen. So I think Moreland and Hanley end up as a platoon. And, and then if an outfielder gets hurt, J.D. Martinez, assuming he's the guy, potentially could see some bats there. Anybody gets a day off, either of the corners, you can do that. But I think they'll make it work to add a power bat like that into their lineup.
Yeah, Benintendi, another source of upside for them, of course. But, they protected him against some lefties last season. You can see that again and put a J.D. Martinez out in left field on the days that Benintendi's out against a lefty. You could do all kinds of things. But the main thing is sign J.D. Martinez to justify me the good faith I've shown in the Red Sox and put them in a success.
I've done my part. You do your part.
Exactly. So now we submitted 9 candidates. If we missed your team and if you're screaming at us, we can't hear you, and that's a good thing. So sorry about that.
And direct all of your problems. It's at Castrovince, exactly. and he'll take it up with you there.
You will not be the first. All right, so we got 9 candidates: Yankees, Angels, Dodgers, Astros, Twins, Nationals, Indians, Cubs, Red Sox. Do we have any consensus on a top five here? I think we can probably all agree the Yankees and Astros belong in the top five. I would even I'd venture to have some argument over maybe even Astros over the Yankees, just because of the I don't know. I'm just trying to talk myself into it. I think it's the Yankees are the top lineup, but obviously the Astros have tremendous depth as well. So we're good on that, right? Those two are in the top five.
Yeah. And I would argue that I would argue the Nationals for the third spot. I really like that lineup. Guys can talk me out of it, but the way the Robles is going to be there, the Turner's going to be healthy. Michael Taylor took a step forward. Hopefully Adam Eaton will be, I've been watching The Crown in case you wonder what that was for. Adam Eaton will be healthy and back, and Rendon's a great player.
Richard Rendon would have been the easier way to get out of that since his name is also Anthony. I think you have to take into account with the Nationals is Bryce Harper and Daniel Murphy are both playing in contract years. That has a habit of pushing guys to put up even better numbers. I think the Nationals are absolutely in the conversation for top three and a lock in the top five.
I agree with all of that. So we got Angels, Dodgers, Twins, Indians, Cubs, and Red Sox are our other candidates for our last two spots. Boy.
I like the Cubs. Yeah. I like the Cubs. I think, you know, you look at them, what they did in 16, they took a little bit of a step back in 17. But, you know, you start any lineup with Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, and a full healthy year of Kyle Schwarber. I just, you know, and then you start penciling in Contreras and Baez and Russell. Really talented team in a league where you only need 8 hitters, not 9. I really, the Cubs, I think, to me, are absolutely, to me, they're the number 4.
All right, Richard, you get to pick the 5th team.
I would argue the Dodgers. And this is a team that began last year, didn't have a leadoff hitter, didn't have a cleanup hitter. And they found two guys in the minor leagues named Chris Taylor and Cody Bellinger to fill that. And I'll tell you, you know, we know their at-bats will be divided up in a lot of different ways. They like to platoon. They like to use guys. But given the platoons and all of that and how Jock Peterson finished the season – and I just think I don't know who, you know, you could argue the Angels, the Indians, you could argue the Red Sox are in there given the depth of that, but I like the Dodgers. Talk me out of it.
I'm not going to bother to talk you out of it. You're so set in your ways that, you know, you're too far down the road. But no, I think we've done pretty good work here. I don't think we've offended too many people. I'm sure.
I made the case for the Dodgers to begin with, so I'm certainly not going to talk you out of it.
Okay. All right. We did all right. We survived that one. But we'll continue to run through, you know, top pitching staffs and all that fun stuff in future podcasts. But for now, we're going to shift gears and talk trade. There's a lot of trade talk still going on at this late stage of the hot stove season. A lot of big names still potentially eligible to be dealt out there. We've talked about, you know, Manny Machado and Garrett Cole and Chris Archer, Christian Yelich, the list goes on and on, Andrew McCutchen. So let's pick a few of these guys here. And Mark, let's start with you. Let's get a Manny Machado trade. And you come at it from the perspective of your good friend there, Brian Cashman, your buddy in the Bronx. What's an acceptable trade proposal in your mind for Manny Machado to get him in pinstripes for 2018?
Well, if I'm telling the truth, I don't think they're going to trade him to me because Peter Angelos doesn't like my team and certainly doesn't want to trade him to a place where they're going to have to see him 18 times. But that said, I'm going to keep making offers.
Hey, you know what? That's a negative attitude you're taking in this conversation. Well, no, but right from the beginning. You've got to come in.
But I'm going to keep making offers anyway because Machado's a great player and we want him. And if we can't get him now, we'll sign him in a year. That said, I'm going to call the Orioles and I'm going to say, here's Chance Adams, Jordan Montgomery, and Miguel Andujar for Manny Machado.
Richard, what do you think?
Well, my inclination is to take the deal. Because no, but I feel like in the art of negotiation, you know, when we did this with Jim Duquette earlier, he would say, you know, this deal is practically finished. Just give me one more guy and then it would be the number one guy. And you felt like you had your pocket picked. But if I'm Dan Duquette, and I know that he's got to sell it to Peter Angelos, the owner of the team. The Yankees are the team I'm going to do the deal with. And I don't care that I have to see Manny Machado 18 times or anything like that. The Yankees can – Brian Cashman's in a position, okay, I'm not going to trade Torres. I'm not going to trade Andujar. You just pick two or three guys just to Sheffield. But I got enough talent that I can make you want to do this deal. And if you're in Baltimore, you got to be realistic. He's not playing there after next year. And are you going to get more for him now or at the trade deadline? So I hate to argue with you, but if you could just give me one more guy, you know, I could probably sell that to my owner. This is what, for people who don't know, this is what GMs do. If it were me, I would make the deal, Brian. But, you know, my owner's very tough. So just one more guy and, you know, Torres. You don't even know what Gleyber Torres looks like. Just give me that guy and we'll call it a day. We'll go have dinner.
See, here I was going to just initially offer you Adams and Montgomery. And then when you asked me for the other guy, I'd say, all right, I'll tell you what, here's Andujar. He fills third base for you where Machado leaves, and now we have a deal. I'm not trading Gleyber Torres. I'm not trading Justice Sheffield. And I'm probably not trading Esteban Florial, who's my center fielder of the future. Beyond that, I'm giving you my top pitching prospect. I'm giving you my, you know, my second best infield prospect and a guy who was, you know, a rookie of the year finisher last year in Jordan Montgomery for a guy you've got 162 games left of. And if you don't do it and you don't trade him, guess what? I'm just going to sign him from you anyway next year. So, you know, let's go get it done.
Well, hold on. Let's don't panic. Let me talk to my staff. hey, we had a deal. Okay, I'm back.
I mean, it's inconvenient that the Yankees are such a great trade partner. I mean, the Yankees have one of the deepest systems in the game. They everything lines up on this Manny Machado situation, except for the inconvenient fact that he is in the division. And as you said, Orioles ownership probably hates them. But aside from those factors, yeah, I think it's easy for us to divorce ourselves from the emotion of the situation and say, you know, just go out and get the best deal regardless of division. But obviously there are factors that play into these discussions, as you guys allude to. So I'll do one that's a little more straightforward and doesn't have those, hot patches, if you will. But the Brewers, I'm going to be David Stearns, who frustratingly is younger than I am. I'm going to be David Stearns, and I'm going to try to get Chris Archer. I'm going to pry him out of the hot little hands of the Tampa Bay Rays. I think that, if any team could pull off a trade of that magnitude, it is the Brewers. They have the need in the rotation, in my opinion. Basically fell a pitcher short last year of the postseason, surprisingly so. And then Jimmy Nelson got hurt his shoulder, and he'll be out a good chunk of 2018. So to get a young, controllable arm like Archer, who's under control for four more years and about, what is it, Mark, about $33
million? $33 million. And the amazing part of that is the next 2 years is only $13 million total. And then it's $20 million over the last 2 years. So the Rays don't have to trade this guy by any means. They can take their time on this one.
Yeah, and that's going to lead to significant overpay. So I don't know if I don't know if I, even pretending to be David Stearns, I don't know if I have it in me to give up what it's probably going to take.
First of all, who are you calling, first of all?
Well, I'm setting up a four-way conference call, yes, with the three-headed monster in Tampa Bay. It's a little tricky to get everybody on the same schedule, and of course it's one of those conference calls where, you know, everybody kind of talks over each other, and you try to do a roll call, and then there's silence, and everybody talks at once. It's very frustrating. So that's why the deal hasn't been done yet. By the way, they're still trying to figure out the conference call.
Hey, let me just speak for Eric Neander in this. You win the NL Central if you make this deal. With Chris Archer, you win. So whatever I ask for, it's nothing compared to what you're going to get out of it. You're going to win this deal regardless. You know, you want Colum A to deepen that bullpen, whatever. But I'm going to give you Chris Archer, and you're going to finish in front of the Cubs. And you know it, and I know it. And your farm system is one of the best in baseball. So whatever you trade me, a couple of guys, you know, Lewis Brinson, Corey Ray, you're going to win this deal. So I would just go to your owner and say, I'm going to make this deal. Whatever he asks for, I'm going to pay, because I don't know about you, but I'd like to have a World Series in Milwaukee.
David, this is Chaim Bloom. He's right. Just do what he says.
Yeah, well, you guys. I mean, you hit on a key word.
Yeah, no, but I'm not totally. The Brewers like where they're at, and they like the fact that they have more talent on the way, but they need another starting pitcher. And
right, Eric, let him make the offer. Let him make the offer. Let's hear what he's offering for Chris Archer.
My owner wants to win. My owner loves to win. My owner is not shy about trying to win. So I'm going to give
you – prospects are prospects.
I'm going to start this deal with Eric Sogard. Okay, feel me out here. Just hear me out.
you're off to a bad start, buddy.
You're burying the lead.
Let me ask you guys this. Do you think a deal can be done that doesn't involve Lewis Brinson? Or is Brinson going to start any deal?
Brinson starts any deal.
No, that's just the starter. That's just where we're starting.
No, I know. Yeah, I'm saying if you could do some combination of Domingo Santana and Ray as a starter in lieu of giving up Brinson, you know, that would be probably worthwhile for the Brewers.
No, I've got Brian Cashman on line two here. Let me get back.
Here's the thing you have to consider with the Rays. Controllability is king. So they want guys who have as many controllable years as possible. And if you don't start – put it this way. If Brinson's not in the offer, then the answer
– Well, wait. What's that? John Daniels is on line three? Oh, David, can we talk later?
All right, you can have Brinson. I never liked him anyway. Let me start with Brinson. I'm going to give you Josh Hader. Now, mind you, I am giving you two guys that are supposed to figure prominently in my 2018 season. So right away, I'm potentially blowing up 2018 here for Chris Archer. But I'm going to keep Domingo Santana in right field. I'm going to hope against all hope that Josh Hader doesn't become a Cy Young winner in Tampa Bay. I'm going to send you Hader. I'm going to send you Brinson. And I'm going to send you Luis Ortiz. young right-hander in my system. And, you know, what's it going to take? One more guy?
Yeah, we can just throw Brett Phillips in there. We go to we've got a deal. Let's have him do the press release right now.
Hey, David, do you remember the deal that we Tampa Bay Rays made for Matt Garza? It was a 5-for-1 with the Cubs. One of those five was a fellow you may have heard of. His name's Chris Archer. That's the kind of deal it's going to take to get Chris Archer away from us, because as I mentioned before, 4 years, $33 million, only $13 million over the next 2 years. We can wait a year, 2 years, and trade this guy, and he's still going to be really valuable. So someone's got to really bowl us over, and I'm thinking 5-for-1 is sort of
I was
where
hoping
we
you didn't remember that trade. And oh man, we seem to be losing connection here, guys. Sorry. I don't know. If I'm the Brewers, I can't go that far down the road. I can't. Not for Chris Archer. I like Chris Archer, but you're right. I mean, you hit on why this hasn't happened, because the Rays have no they have incentive perhaps to trade him, but it's not a pressing matter. Right. No urgency. And, you know, Archer has not totally lived up to the billing. He gives you durability. Don't get me wrong. He's pitched 200 innings each of the last four seasons, but yeah, to go down that road, Milwaukee is going to be pretty cautious, I think. I think it's much like what we saw this summer, where they were willing to improve. They were willing to make the moves to improve incrementally within the context of 2017. Talk about Neil Walker and Anthony Swarzak, but you know, they weren't willing to just totally raid the farm system just yet. I still don't think they're there. And I think what we're speaking to is the difficulty of this deal, because if you have to give a Brinson and Hader as a starting point, and again, you're potentially robbing Peter to pay Paul there, so to speak, because I think one thing I like about Milwaukee kind of staving off the regression that's currently forecast for them for 2018 is the depth of their system, and how there's probably a lot of young talent that's going to influence things here in 2018 that's maybe not getting as much credit as it deserves. So, yeah, I'm going to hang up and I'm going to move on to to other things. Like,
you know what? I agree with you, because I think David Stearns would rather go try to get a free agent, and I think he feels their best days, that they are in the position that they're on the verge of a really nice run here, and don't do anything. Don't lose sight of the big picture.
I think the Brewers and the Twins have very similar approaches there, in terms of they both contended last year. In the Twins' case, they made the playoffs earlier than most people thought. Things came together, and they're not about to start losing sight of the fact that they're looking at long-term sustainability rather than they're one piece away and let's just, you know, say hell with the farm system and go for it. I think you're right. They both rather spend money. We've heard all about how both those teams, Minnesota and Milwaukee, want to spend money on a pitcher. I think that's a far more likely scenario.
All right, let's do one more. Faking a deal here. Richard, you take the wheel. Who are you going to be? Who are you trying to get?
I'm going to be Neil Huntington of the. No, I'm sorry. I'm going to be Bobby Evans and Brian Sabian of the San Francisco Giants, and I'm going to try to pry Andrew McCutchen out of Pittsburgh. I need somebody to play center field. Brian Kutch had a great bounce back year last year. So, you know, I'm talking to Neil Huntington. You two guys are Neil Huntington. And I'm going to say, you know, I know a lot of people say bad things about the Giants farm system, but I know you guys are smarter than that. And you know how good some of our guys are. So I'm going to offer you Brian Reynolds. I'm going to offer you a young outfielder named Austin Slater. You want me to sub in my center fielder of the future, Steven Duggar. I'll do that. But let's be honest about this, Brian, that Andrew McCutchen is 31 years old. He's got 2 years left on it. He's got 1 year left on his contract. We're in a win now mode. He gives us where we want to go. And I'm offering you guys that would position you for the future.
What do you think, Mark? Are we doing this?
Well, I don't think so. I think McCutchen's the face of our franchise.
Let me just – what's that? Lorenzo Cain's agent's on the phone? Okay.
McCutchen's the face of our franchise, and for us to give him up, it's a bad sign to the fan base and what's already going to be a tough season. I just think, you know, we need somebody who's a guaranteed, you know, sort of star in the making, and – I'm not sure, you know, if you start throwing Ramos's name around, then I think maybe we have something to talk about. But Right now, I think, you know, McCutcheon's going to be a really valuable guy to somebody. And if it comes down to July and a team is one piece away, I think we can do better.
You know, that's interesting. Ramos, how old is he? He's what, 18 years old?
Ramos is 18 years old.
You know, I think I would do that deal. I want to win now. I got Bumgarner. I got Posey. I really don't care what Ramos is 2-3 years down the road. I mean, I want to do this deal. I want McCutcheon. I really want Lorenzo Cain. But the money gets to a point that we're just not comfortable with. Even though we do have money to spend, we still have to go out and get another piece, probably a pitcher. You do it, Ramos, for McCutcheon?
I don't know. I think it's some one of those guys.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Yeah. Now, look, there was a GM that we all know.
Look, five-year top eight prospects for outfielders. You know you can only play three at one time, right? You know DH.
There was a GM who used to propose deals, and when the deal would be accepted, he would accuse the other GM of trying to screw him. I think Ramos for McCutcheon is fair, and I think you're going to get a great player out of this and a player that you're going to have control of for a long time.
As much as I do appreciate Richard's ability to play two parts in one, he's playing both Brian Sabian and Bobby Evans.
I didn't hear voices. I would have liked different voices for this.
I mean, kind of like an Eddie Murphy and Nutty Professor kind of thing. I want to see some work put into these roles. But.
Well, you know, Jim Bowden, when he used to make a trade, and Jerry Krause, when he ran the Bulls, did the same thing. He would call up a GM and say, now, the way I look at your team is this and this and this. He would start assessing the guy's team. So I'm going to help you. And really, maybe that's why he didn't make that many trades, because it pissed the other guy off within 12 seconds.
If I'm Neil Huntington, if I'm the Pirates, I want this to be more of a retool than an outright rebuild. I don't want it centered around, you know, 18-year-olds. I just think there's some way to do. Honestly, number one is I'm deciding what to do about Gerrit Cole before I'm moving Andrew McCutcheon, because Gerrit Cole is their most valuable trade asset. And, you know, if it's not going to be a workable deal for Cole, I'm going to take my chances going into 2018, you know, with Cole, with Kutch, with Josh Harrison. I'm going to see what happens. And I don't feel like the market for McCutcheon is going to be dramatically different in July than it is here today, because I don't think I'm going to get a knockout deal either way, quite frankly. So I'd rather take my chances with Kutch. But again, if they get a trade that knocks their socks off for Cole, you know, maybe that changes the discussion quite a bit. That's the way I'm approaching it.
Yeah, I would like to argue with you on that, but I actually agree.
Well, that's
the first. The angel side on top of my shoulder just said, no, we got to hold on to McCutcheon. So
there it is. Okay. Well, we didn't get much accomplished here. I don't know if we made a single deal, but we tried. And I think we showed in our own weird way why there is such a hold up in the marketplace, because this stuff's hard, man. And I've written my fair share of fake trade columns over the years. And, you know, you submit them, and then instantly you're kind of kicking yourself, because you're like, well, no, wait, it doesn't make sense from this angle or that angle. And then some dude in the comments section points that out, you know, very nicely, I might add, too. But it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah, yes.
Comment sections are the most civil place in our society.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Seconded only by Twitter.
Yeah.
But all right. Well, good stuff from Mark Feinzan and from Richard Justice. I think we had some fun here today looking at top lineups, looking at some fake trades, and more to come. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you soon.